Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon to everyone. This is Cassandra Dane, and you're on the Edge. This is the radio show where we highlight artists who take all their works to the very edge of creativity extreme. And today we have a lovely guest on our show. She's a good friend of mine. I've known this lady for a couple of years now. She happens to be an author, along with myself, at Naughty Nights Press. And we have her all the way from England today. So with titles like Menage a Tess, Tess's Dilemma, and Tickled Pink, this lovely woman is going to be bringing you a little bit about her works. And we're going to talk a little bit about domination, submission, BDSM, that kind of thing. So please welcome to the show the lovely Tessa Wanton. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am doing great. How is it over in England today? It's, what, about 7 o'clock over there?
It's 7 o'clock, yeah, just after that. And it's absolutely freezing at the moment, but it's not raining, so that's nice. Makes a change.
That's right. You're seeing it's different time of year, I guess, over there. It's cold and wet and all of that. We're just moving in to the kind of fall winter over here in Virginia. I'm on the East Coast.
Oh, lovely.
I'm
just fascinated with weather. I'm afraid it's the stereotype.
Well, we're lucky today. It's about 72 outside, which is a little bit unusual for this time of year for us. So kind of one of those, yay, we don't have to worry about snow or sleet or, you know, that kind of thing. Well, tell me a little bit, Missy, about how you got into writing, because I know this is has been a delight for you, and you've had so many accolades over this past year. So let's talk a little bit about how you got into it all.
Well, it was this is a really unusual story as such, but it was a few years ago now. I got made redundant from my day job, and I had to spend a lot of time on the computer because it was everything's electronic now, CVs for this, electronic computer searching for jobs. And I kind of got a bit worried about stepping away from the computer, so I thought, well, what can I do? So I started researching various different things, and I tend to like the psychological aspects and relationships and things like that. So I had a few friends who were into BDSM, one which is dominatrix, and I always found it fascinating to understand why. You know, what made people tick? Why would they do these sort of things? Because it seemed fairly alien to me at first. And then I sort of started reading and researching and chatting to people. I just found it absolutely fascinating. And so I thought the best way to understand how people think is to write it from their point of view and try and put yourself in their mind, in their emotions, that kind of thing. So I started writing little passages and posting it on a website called FetLife. And I was starting to get some really good feedback. And people said, oh, can you make this into a full-length story sort of thing? I thought, I've never written anything in my life. I mean, my first degree was in composition, music composition. So for that, I didn't even do a dissertation. So never really written anything more than 5,000 words. But I thought, well, you know, I'll have a go at it. It's not like I've got much else going on with my time. So I sat down and I wrote it, and I wrote more and more and put them up on FetLife. And people were like, yeah, fantastic, we love this. And then one day I had this message drop into my inbox from Gina Kincaid. And she was like, finish this story off completely, we'll publish it. And I thought, no, gosh, you know, you're just being nice kind of thing. And so I said, no, it's fine, I'm only doing this for fun and whatever. And anyway, she persisted, and in the end I thought, well, you know, what have I got to lose, really? So I submitted The Training of Tess, and that was the first one. It was published 2 months later. And then after that I got signed up for the book, to write everything else that I ever write, to go to Naughty Nights Press, and basically it's from there onwards. And you know, besides BDSM, I write tickle stuff as well, because that's absolutely fascinating. That is, you know, the amount of people that I talk to that have got a tickle fetish, and it's just opened up a massive world of information, and I just fantastic. I love it. It's just really interesting. Find new things out every day.
Well, and it's interesting for our listeners out there who don't understand what FedLife is. It's actually a social media site that is designed for folks who are interested in alternative lifestyles, i.e. BDSM, domination, spanking, whatever. But the fetishes are huge. I mean, tremendous amounts of them. And one of them, and it's indeed what Tessa's talking about, is a tickling fetish. I mean, there are lots of folks that have that, and they're even embarrassed to talk about it. And your Tickled Pink, the cover I just think is just dynamic and wonderful and all of that. But, you know, the story itself is just so poignant and funny and cute and powerful and all of that, and it allows people into a fetish that they might not ordinarily even think about reading.
Yeah, I mean, that's the interesting thing, because I've had readers come back to me who enjoyed the training of Tess but weren't quite sure if they liked BDSM or anything. But they read Tickled Pink and went, that's exactly what I like to do. And it's kind of interesting. I mean, one particular couple, it actually introduced that to them, and they both found out they enjoyed it. And, you know, they sort of said, thank you for introducing us to something entirely different. And, you know, I must stress that everything I like is completely fiction. I mean, I have had people say, is it autobiographical? No, if it was autobiographical, I wouldn't be writing about it. I'd definitely be doing it. But, you know, they actually took things and actually did them, and I thought, oh, okay. But, you know, I will stress it is complete fiction. It's just a fantasy to escape, to, you know, to just let your mind rove and just to completely escape real life just for a short time.
Well, and I think, I mean, we all put a tiny, tiny bit of ourselves in some of this, but I think what some folks, and I don't know about you, but I get this all the time, especially on FetLife, of which I'm a member too. I also write erotica, and we put little snippets of our, you know, worlds on their book covers and little bits of the writings. And
oh, yeah.
Get all the time. Oh, you do all of these things in your real life? Mm-hmm. You bet. Every single one of them, right.
Yeah,
I have no time for anything
else.
Busy
person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I use lasses and whips and chains every day in my real life. Oh, my. So, you know, but it's wonderful to have the imagination.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I am quite guilty of writing, basing some characters on people I know. I always say, always be aware that with an author, if you do or say something funny or you act in a certain way, be careful, because it probably will end up in a book. And if you're horrible, then doubly so. That's the thing. There's always a good way to get revenge.
And this is true, folks out there. We all do this no matter what you think. We might change your name and your status in life, but you will appear in the pages.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing better than revenging writing, because that lasts forever, doesn't it, really?
Oh, you were so right about that. Hey, for folks out there in our radio land, this is You're on the Edge with Cassandra Dane and Tessa Wanton as my guest today. We're talking all things BDSM and erotic and just yummy, delicious treats. But hopefully we'll get some callers in today. If you'd like to call and ask anything on the World of Ink Network today, please do so at 714-242-5259, and we'd love to hear from you. We've also got the chat room open, so please feel free to go over there as well. Well, tell me, what is your favorite book of all that you've written? Is it Tickle Pink, or I think you have a new, pretty hot one out right now.
Well, yes, my book that I'm most proud of, I guess, is Menage a Tess, which is the latest one that I've actually released. And it's just, it's quite an emotional one, really, because there's a lot that goes on. I mean, my original character, Tess, she had a lot of decisions to make. And it's not always quite what you expect. I mean, it's had a lot of mixed reviews as this book, and I kind of guess that would happen, because I don't particularly write fairy tales. I don't write things. I like to write what happens in the real world, and not everything always ends up Rosie. I mean, I'm not going to say she doesn't have a happy ending, because she does in a way, but it's not quite what the readers hope or expect. Although some are saying that, some readers have come back and said, yeah, no, we quite like that ending. It's like, okay. But
right.
There's a lot that goes into that book. There's a lot of, I mean, it's a full novel-length book, which is the first one I've written, novel-length, that is. And it was such an emotional rollercoaster. I haven't actually finished reading it since without actually ending in tears, which is probably not selling the book, but, you know, for me, it's about the most realistic I've actually managed to get it. And it kind of pushes the boundaries a tad, but, you know, what's the point in writing if you can't just push it just that little bit more?
Well, that's a good point to bring out with you pushing the boundaries. What kind of reactions do you get in your real life, so to speak? And then a second question would be, how many folks in your real life know that you are a writer and what your subject matter is?
Well, this is true, actually. I mean, when I first started writing, I was really worried about what the reaction would be. I mean, I was nervous to tell my husband at the time. I was like, well, I've kind of been writing, you know, like what I told you about, blah, blah, blah. There's a publisher who actually wants to publish it. And he was actually really supportive, which I was, you know, very pleased about. I'm surprised, actually, because you just don't know what people are going to say or how they're going to react. And then, then obviously, at that point, I thought, well, I'll tell my parents. And that was the biggest thing, because I thought, well, how are they going to react? And they reacted unbelievably well. They just said, we're proud of you. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't quite believe how well this is all going. And then I told my sister, and she was okay too. And then I told friends who thought, great, does that mean we get free books? So I thought, okay, nobody's having a problem with this. So in my actual life, I've had no backlash to this at all. And it was a surprise, because you just don't know how people are going to react. I think it just, you know, says how fantastic my friends and family are, really. Because I know lots of authors who've had real issues with it, and they've had a lot of really bad things happen to them because of it, and that's terrifying, really, because society shouldn't be like that these days, but it happened, so you do have to be careful. But, you know, obviously, saying that, you don't want loads of kids at the local school knowing, because that's not right either. You know, I write adult matters, so you have to be very careful. But, you know, in general, people understand this, and that's that, really. I think I've been so lucky. It's unbelievable. And I definitely thank my lucky stars for that one.
Well, it's interesting, though, and I've not had I have a lot of friends from England. Fortunately, that's the wonderful thing about social media. There's so many bad things to say about it. But the good portion is that I get to meet folks from all across the world. You know, and it's just like real time, the way we talk and everything. But in speaking with folks from England, it's almost to me, in a way, like you guys are more progressive in your viewing of some of erotic or kink is probably a little too strong of a word, but in this sense, you're much more open-minded, I think. Have you found that to be true?
I think so. I think it does seem that way. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of people around who are anti it as such, but it tends to be, they don't tend to be quite so over the top about it. I suppose it's because people are so open-minded and free-thinking as such that a lot of people are more likely to consider it and think, well, as long as you're not hurting me, then I'm not bothered, you carry on doing what you want to do. And people also find it quite, not titillating, isn't it? The right word. I think it's interesting. You know, they're more likely to go, oh, okay, so tell me a bit about it, rather than, you know, oh, don't talk to me. You know, it's almost like it's interesting and it's a bit of a giggle. And they, as I often say, my way of explaining it is the Stephen King argument. I mean, just because Stephen King writes about aliens and ghosts and stuff, does that mean he actually does it and believes it exists? So I write BDSM from that position and explain that to them as well. And then people think, oh, I can read and understand this and learn about it. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to have to go out, get a whip and start practicing, you know. So I think it's just understanding, and it's the same with anything. If there's enough communication and education, then there's nothing wrong in the world anyway, really.
Well, I totally agree with you. I find it interesting, from my perspective, the backlash that I continue to get, even though I've written and been published for several years. And you kind of go, really, folks? I mean, you don't know what I write about. You haven't figured that out after all this time. If you don't want to read it, fine. But don't condemn us that do.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, everybody has their own choice, and that's what it's about, really.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been an interesting ride. I don't think you've been affected by the Kobo / Amazon, you know, censorship kind of situation as of yet, I should say, because you never know who they're going to hit. But have you heard any comments or backlash, and, you know, whether it's in England or your friends or whatever, you know, what are folks saying it from your end of the world?
I've not really heard much about it. It doesn't seem to have been affecting anybody as yet. But I mean, it's kind of inevitable, I guess, when things become more mainstream and more, I suppose, more common, then people try to, people try to censor it, I guess. You know, they try to impose some sort of barriers on it. And, you know, as with anything, it's like you have a film that's 18 or PG or 15, it's the same thing, and then all of a sudden, if it's something that people don't understand, they don't want to understand, it's easier to just banish outright.
Right. I agree with you there, and I think one of the nice things, the publishing industry is going to continue changing. I mean, it has to evolve to different levels. You know, we had an influx of so many of the small publishers, and a lot of them now are either folding because they don't have enough money and they realize it's not a money-making operation, or they're changing their methodologies where they're no longer accepting erotic BDSM erotica. That happens to be the case with one of my publishers, Rebel Inc. Press, which is no longer accepting that. Naughty Nice Press, on the other hand, I know. Naughty Nice, trust me, it's been one of those really situations for me, although they're accepting my work. Just because I've been a long-time author. But with Naughty Nights Press, I think Gina had embraced the concept of we're going to take it a little bit out avant-garde for a spin, and we're going to hold on to it, and we're going to really show the world that sex and sexuality and, you know, whatever kind that you want and you hunger for, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing weird about it.
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, as soon as you start making something taboo and start putting a label on it that's wrong or this, that and the other, without knowing the truth behind this, it becomes a complete censorship issue, which you simply can't do it. I mean, if somebody wants to partake in a BDSM activity, as long as it is safe and sane and consensual, or rack, or whatever you want to use, as you know, to make sure it's safe between consenting adults, that should be the case. Now, that's just my opinion. I mean, obviously, where it's non-consenting adults, then you have something entirely different. But that is not just with the BDSM. It's for anything in life. If people consent to it, and it's not hurting anybody else or causing harm to themselves, for that matter, then there shouldn't be a problem with that.
Oh, I agree with you. And I think the misnomers about BDSM, writers who write it, people who explore it, or people who enjoy watching and or reading about it, it's like there's still that taboo that says they're weird, there's something wrong with them, they're deviants, And that's really not the case for me, and I don't know, and this is kind of a question for you. When I do my research for it in talking with masters and doms and slaves and submissives and all of that, I see these folks as being able to so embrace and embody their that inner soul, that I applaud them for what they are and that they can enjoy it. How have your experiences in talking with folks been like that?
I mean, I've been really quite lucky, actually, because a lot of my friends, are into BDSM. And so they've been very open in how they talk to me about it and the things that they, you know, they experience from it and that it brings to them. And a lot of these people seem a hell of a lot more balanced than people who don't actually embrace it. And it's one of those things that you think, well, if it brings them that much peace and happiness and stability in their lives, then surely that's an absolutely fantastic thing. What's more, a lot of people who practice BDSM are in high-powered jobs. You know, they've done well in the traditional society and in what most people aspire to, you know, and become CEOs of companies or, you know, lawyers or that kind of thing. And it just amazes me that people can turn their nose up at a practice that they don't know anything about. And that's right. My biggest thing is education. I mean, if you think that you have an opinion on something, make sure you get all of the facts first before you can make an assumption about it.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that what folks also sometimes don't know is in doing the research, you know, you're learning so much about their lifestyle and what the concept is and bringing it to the forefront in the right way, certainly for me as an author, is very, very important. I think that you can get criticized very highly if you don't bring a real light to it versus, you know, what you think BDSM or domination is. I mean, have you had, I know your friends are in this, but other folks that you don't know that might be in the lifestyle, what are the comments about your works if they've read it?
I would say everybody I've spoken to who's in the lifestyle, whether I know them or not, and a lot of my readers have come to me, they've actually commented on how realistic what I've written and the concepts are, which pleases me no end because, you know, I try very, very hard to make it realistic, to make sure that what I write is correct. In some ways, actually, I have had comments from some that my writing isn't as hardcore and as harsh as they would expect or want. But as I often say, it's not all about that. It's a lot of it is very sensual and very connection driven, and it isn't all about just sex and getting off and things like that. That can be part of it, but it's not the main part of it. So I tend to write for things that are a lot softer, actually, and I have had people say that that's a bad thing, but you know, that's personal opinion. I know that what I'm going to write isn't going to please everybody. But, you know, I'd say I've not had anybody in the scene actually turn around to me and say, what you write is wrong, I think it's terrible. In fact, the only people who have said things like that to me and never quite as bad as that are people who actually don't practice it. And to be fair, I would probably expect that to be the case because a lot of what I do write is probably pushing the boundary for someone who doesn't necessarily think about BDSM.
And I have to agree with you there. I think that getting the compliment from those in the industry or in the lifestyle, I think is an amazing factor. And for those of us who don't practice it on a daily basis or at all, you know, you get into enjoying, though, and I think appreciating the fact that it is such a close bond between some doms and subs or masters and slaves. And, you know, it's very interesting and fascinating to me.
Yes, absolutely. I do find that whole relationship very fascinating. It's, I mean, that's exactly the reason why I got into it in the first place, was because that relationship between people, male and female, 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 male, male, whatever, in some cases, groups of people, it was like nothing that I'd seen traditionally. And it was something that I just thought, I just really wanted to understand it. It was absolutely fascinating. And you know, I probably still don't understand it completely, which is why I keep writing, because I'm hoping one day I'll have this epiphany and go, right, that's it. But it's, you know, it's just such a fascinating thing. And it's, oh, you know, some, when people practice this, they're not on, most people aren't having even a drink or drugs, but they still attain this state, like subspace or dom space or whatever you wish to call
right.
it, which is,
right.
you know, a million times more effective and all-consuming than it is to, you know, get high on drugs and drink. And I think that is something which really should be explored, because that has to be safer than, you know, taking drugs or drinking.
For those of you in our listener land who don't know what subspace is, it's in a, and I won't be technically perfectly correct on this, but it is a heightened state of sensitivity and euphoria that you can get in with your body, your mind, your soul. It's all-encompassing that is supposedly, and I have not experienced it, so this is why it's a little hard for me to describe very accurately, but it's like an electrifying feeling that people, once they have it, whether it's in because of pain and or extreme pleasure, it's usually a combination thereof, they get into this moment that they are just taken elsewhere, almost like you're floating above the clouds, sort of like as what Tessa is saying, drugs or alcohol can also do for you, and needless to say, it is completely without any of these methods around, that it's just from, you know, what the person is helping you feel with the pain or the pleasure. So it's a fascinating thing to try to listen to people that have been in this space before, and the way they describe it, pretty amazing to me.
Yes, yeah, it is. I mean, I've seen it a couple of times as well, and it's like they're almost not there, but they're actually completely present as well. It's the loss of control where they're handing it over to somebody else, and it's more trust than I've seen in anything else. I mean, people say they have trusting relationships, but this goes beyond trust. I mean, they're literally placing their entire life in somebody else's hands, and that's just mind-blowing, really. For someone as control freakish as myself, that is completely mind-blowing.
Oh, I agree with you. I think that the concept for me, if I ever had a master or a dom, I mean, obviously that is the level of trust, and you want to experience that, but I think from what I've heard, the ability to completely let go sometimes is extremely rare. You have to have that level of trust that is just much more even than any marriage I've known about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if all marriages were like that, it would be amazing, wouldn't it? Everybody would be incredibly
Yeah, we wouldn't have divorce rates skyrocketing every year. I mean, I don't know. That's what people don't understand about it, is it is just a phenomenal once it, you know, if it works. I mean, there are some doms, whether it's female or male, obviously this is not male-driven here, they can be monsters too. So, you know, it's all in the experience and learning to trust someone and then being able to let go, and it has to be right for both the dom and the sub.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is another reason why my favorite book is Ménage à Trois, because, you know, I do deal very deeply with the issues of trust. I mean, this is the main point of this, is trust and deserved trust as well. I mean, it's not just that the submissive or the slave have to trust their master or dom. They have to be worthy and earn it as well. And a lot of, I mean, I have encountered some doms where they've broken trust and people have talked about it afterwards, and, you know, some people have reconciled it, some people just, you know, ignore it and pretend it hasn't happened. But it's really damaging when that can go wrong as well, which is why it's so dangerous in some ways, and why instead of actually censoring these things, I think there should be more, what's the word I'm looking for, sort of regulation perhaps. There does tend to be some regulations. For instance, if people go to clubs, of which there are many in London, and they have club nights and you have house doms and house subs and whatever, you tend to get the regulation there, and it tends to be safer because you've got experienced people who can check that what's happening is correct and it isn't bad. But oftentimes these things don't happen in those kind of environments, and you know, instead of censoring it and pushing it underground and making sure these things can't happen, they should be monitoring it to making sure that everything that does happen is, you know, consensual, is the right thing, that the people are in the right mental frame of mind to accept it. I mean, oftentimes if people are in a really weak frame of mind, whatever's going on in their life, they're stressed or upset, and they use this as a vent to let go of all that, that's just as dangerous as putting a knife to someone's throat in some cases, because once the mind is broken, it's very difficult to get that trust back.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And let alone the fact that there are certain aspects of BDSM that are called edge play that, and I don't know if you've actually written about any of these, you were saying you do a lot more of the softer sides, but a lot of people, it's like anything else. You try marijuana, you want a harder drug. You try a beer, you want hard liquor. People that do some aspects of BDSM want more, and so they move to edge play, things like asphyxiation play, knife play, things that literally can and do kill hundreds of people every year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's quite interesting because, yes, I do write the softer side of it. But I have seen needle play, knife play, and some various very interesting and quite stomach-churning kind of hook play, but I won't discuss that because I know it's mid-afternoon over there. I have seen people who do this, and I've seen the reaction they get from it, and people really enjoy it. They live for it. They're looking forward to someone taking a scalpel to them, and that I really, really can't get my head around, or having someone stapling, you know, surgical staples into them. But people do enjoy it. But interesting that you bring that up, because as that is starting to emerge more and things are starting to come out of the woodwork a little bit more, there's clubs, like I say, in London, some clubs accept this, other clubs say, no, we can't do that. Because obviously you've got to have some sort of medical staff on hand to make sure if it does go wrong, because these things do go wrong, that there's some way to make sure everything's okay again. I mean, you could just imagine going to the hospital for that one, can't you? Oh, well, you know, I was just asking someone to slash me up with a knife. You know, the police would be involved in everything at that point, because then the understanding's not there, is it? You know,
no.
If it does it wrong, that there could all be sorts of, you know, assault charges, whatever, and that's just a waste of everybody's time when actually it was just a simple accident. But then again, how do you know it was a simple accident if somebody's mind's not in the right place?
That's very true. I actually talked to a master about a year ago who, you know, and you can start, I think you and I both can see some of these ones that are, I call them wannabe doms or wannabe masters that, you know, they're really in it or on Set Life or some of these social medias for sex only. But some of them are truly, you know, masters. And this one particular gentleman had said a very good friend of his had a submissive who was very much into breath play. Long and short of it is, an accident happened and she died. And he would have been put away for life had he not been able to prove and provide emails back and forth where they planned the event, they talked about it, this was their method of enjoying, you know, edge play. And he got off, so to speak, but for him, of course, he was devastated and he couldn't even enjoy the lifestyle after that, as you could probably imagine. So you have to be careful what you're getting involved in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean that there's nothing more horrific than that, is there? I mean, someone places your life in their hands and you take it. I mean, that is the reality of it. It's a case of that can happen. I mean, that's what most people find exciting, is the fact that there is that danger of something going wrong. That's the adrenaline. It's like jumping out of an aeroplane, isn't it? I mean, people jump out of an aeroplane with parachutes, without parachutes, you name it. And that's not, you know, banned, but it is regulated. So I think the law perhaps should come up to date a little bit more and understand that people are doing these things. but, you know, to protect everybody, to protect the different parties. And it's making things more mainstream. And I know some people would say, no, I don't want my BDSM fetish to go mainstream. The whole fascination with it will come and go as a fad, like a lot of things do. But there will always be the people who are submissive, who are dominant, or everything in between, and who have kinks that is part of who they are. They will never change, and they shouldn't have to change because society can't cope with it.
Well, I agree with you there, and I think that one of the nice aspects about being able to write about it is that you can allow both yourself as a person and your readers to explore it where they might not be comfortable doing anything physically. At least they can get a taste and a flavor and enjoy it by reading about it.
Yes, and that's the other thing. I mean, I don't write my books to be an education as such, but for me, actually, I write them as an education for myself so I can work through if I ever have a chance, I would love to do a psychology degree. It's something that I just find absolutely fascinating, how people's minds work and just human beings in general. I think interactions is one of the biggest things. I mean, you can see into the 21st century that we've got Facebook, social media, blog talk radio, for instance. All of these things are about bringing people together and relationships, forming relationships, education. And for me, writing was to get these things down on paper, to understand them, because I found that there wasn't really anywhere for me to fully understand what this was all about. And the things, like, for instance, I've mentioned the tickling before. I find it absolutely fascinating because it seems such an innocent kink. It's one of those kinks that people don't think is inaccessible. It tends to be a junior kind of kink that people think, oh yeah, I don't mind tickling someone in the ribs a bit, because, you know, laughter's fine, there's nothing kinky about that, it's just laughter. And then you go towards foot fetish from there, and stockings and suspenders and all that kind of thing. And everyone's like, oh yeah, we understand that fetish, you know, French maid and dressing up. And it just seems to be more acceptable and more accessible for some reason. But there's still quite a lot of harder elements to it, because there's an awful lot of bondage involved in it. Because let's face it, unless you tie someone down, you're going to get a kick in the face if you're tickling the feet. So that understanding there needs to be had, because you can't tie someone down incorrectly, because you could damage the nerves in their hands or feet, for instance. And it's not as innocent as it particularly seems. It could be quite... I mean, if you tickle someone and don't allow them to breathe because they're laughing too much, they could actually pass out. And there's a lot more jeopardy to it than people realise. And it's something, again, that it's education. It's bringing this to people and saying, look, have you thought about this? This is real. You've got somebody's life in your hands, and yes, you might just be tickling them, but hey, this could also happen.
True. Absolutely. And I don't think people realize that there are so many types of fetishes and or kinks out there. You could just, the sky's the limit with what you could think about. And for the lay person or the vanilla person, all they're thinking about are whips and chains, oh my. Well, there's just so much more.
Oh yeah, oh, there's just so much more. I mean, if I had a pound for every time somebody says, oh, so you're a dominatrix, have you got a whip? It's like, that's just getting old now.
Yeah.
A million times.
Oh, I know. And they'll read some of my stories and they'll say, I didn't know you were submissive. I would have thought you were a dominatrix. It's a story. Hello.
Yeah, I just find it hilarious. I mean, I mean, actually, sometimes I do say yes and then sort of look over the top of my glasses at people and just watch them go,
And if you're not careful, I'm going to use it on you later today.
Yes, I get you the tea now.
Yes, exactly. Well, in your experience,
they mess with you quite so much.
No, they don't, and that is funny, because I do actually get that like you do, and sometimes I have to mess with their heads, because it's just plain fun.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for someone to buy me a pair of shoes, though. I much prefer that. Get me some shoes now.
Well, you never know. Now that you've said it on the airwaves, you never know what might happen.
Yes, I like Dr. Martens, everybody. But then again, you know, if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, people will probably know that anyway.
True. Good point. Well, tell me about your experience in, you know, you're only with Naughty Nights Press, is that correct?
Yes, that's it. I'm exclusively signed to Naughty Nights Press.
And how has your experience been? I mean, and obviously I'm with Naughty Nights Press too, so, you know, I can probably guess your answer, but I want you to tell the world, how do you feel about that experience?
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult choosing a publisher. I mean, it's one of those things that there seem to be so many out there, and you wonder where you fit as such. But, I mean, I was lucky that Gina approached me, and, you know, I looked at what she had to offer and everybody else who she was published with, who she published. And I just seem to fit in really well with everybody, and they're just such a supportive bunch of writers as well as being a supportive publisher. You know, I have a full-time day job, as many authors do. It's not anything that's hidden. I mean, you know, we write for the joy of it, not because it's ever going to give us a full-time career. Now, I have that, and I also do a lot of amateur singing on the side as well, because I enjoy that. It's, you know, it's a release. It's a way that I can express myself, and that's my first love, is music, as well as literature, but really music. So, you know, trying to write in all of this as well is quite a difficult task. Now, Gina's just absolutely fantastic about that. You know, I can sit down and say, look, I've got a really busy few months coming up. Might have difficulty blogging, might have difficulty writing. And she will often just say to me, look, just get what you can down and just let it come out. And for, it's just fantastic as far as that's concerned. She's so understanding with me. And I'm completely grateful for that. And the editors I've worked with have been absolutely fantastic as well. I mean, none of them have ever tried to change my voice. And that's a difficult one because an author's voice is, you know, it's pretty much their trademark in how they write and how they are. And I mean, a lot of people have said to me that I write quite lyrically, and in a flow. I mean, the only thing I can attribute that to is obviously because I'm a composer, I write music, and I must write the same way is the only way I can think. So for me, trying to get that emotional and sensual flow through my writing, you can't have that edited out because otherwise it changes the book entirely. I mean, everything I write is planned into a specific arc, into a story arc, so it works in one way or another. So that's important too, and I mean Gina recognises that, so she pairs me up with an editor and we work together and get that sorted. And thankfully I don't generally have to have too much work on them, touch wood, as yet. But you know, I'm still learning as a writer. I mean, I'm relatively new to this. I have absolutely no qualms in saying that I'm terribly inexperienced. I have so much to learn. And so, you know, I'm learning it with Naughty Nights Press, and they're doing, you know, fantastically for me. I mean, I've got 6 books out now. Interestingly, one of the books that's doing most well for me at the moment is a book called Love in an Elevator, which is just a short that I wrote over a week, funnily enough. And it was my first bisexual ladies, I guess you would call them, book. And that seems to be flying off the shelves, and I have no idea why, because it's written in the same vein, it's written in the same way as my other books. But it just seems to have hit a nerve with people, and they seem to love it, which I can't complain about. I'm not complaining about that at all. But this is why I always want to talk to my readers, because I want to know what they like, what they want to see more, what they think I do well, what they think I'm rubbish at. It's just, I always want this feedback, just, you know, because when you get a bad review, you do sit there and think, oh, I just don't want to write anymore. I'll go, well, I do this. It's my baby and I've just had it. So it's rubbish or whatever. But I would rather have a review than no review at all, because even if you can get a strong emotion, whether it's good or bad, you've got that strong emotion. Your writing has moved somebody.
Oh, I agree with you. I completely do. And for those who don't understand, I mean, reviews are all over the place. They're going to be, sometimes it's the opinions, you know, but it is wonderful to have people talk about it, whether it's good or bad. And I think we might have a caller on the line. We're out today, so let's see. Do we have any questions?
Yes, you
for the
do. Hi, it's Marcia. Yeah, it's Marcia.
Hey, Marcia.
Hi, Tess. How are you? You know, I'm listening. I'm listening. Usually when, you know, people are on my show, I never get to say much, but, you know, I'm listening to the two of you talk. And, you know, it's so interesting because all the points that you brought out are what people really feel. And, you know, you're just writing something like somebody's writing a mystery or a thriller or, you know, learning about murder and all these other things. So I think that, you know, that's one of the things people don't get, is that this does not mean you're practicing. This
right.
might mean you're writing. This is, you're an author, both of you.
That's correct.
And the, you know, it is different. You know, I have to admit, though, you know, because it is, your England, I think it's, they're very much more open, because I myself am thinking that, you know, when I saw the pictures that were on for Blog Talk, I'm thinking, should they stay on? Should they stay off? I mean, I thought about this, and I wrote it to Virginia. I said, Virginia, I don't know. Maybe I should talk to Cassandra. I'm thinking, like, and I'm talking the truth, and I'm saying, like, I don't know. But then I left them on because, you know, I thought, well, Blog Talk will make that decision. It is a very tough decision here because I think that you don't know what is allowed and what's not. Do you know that, you know, when you put pictures mm-hmm. out, like on Blog Talk, I didn't know if we should do it or not, but I said, okay, fine, we'll do it, because it is freedom of the press.
And Kev,
I mean,
what you may – no, let me just say this. What you, I'm not sure if you noticed. What I do when I put these shows up is, that's why, like, I ask you for your covers, because it does a slideshow.
Right. Now it does more than it actually, they just changed
yeah.
it, so it is a little more difficult. You can put more things in. And I'm thinking to myself, because I don't know myself, you know, because sometimes, you know, I, you know, people do get very intense on this issue, and I know that. And I've been having writers on my show, authors, for the last 3 years before it became like now everybody's doing it. But, you know, and Cassandra, you had that show 3 years ago or four, you know what I mean? I mean, you
mm-hmm.
had the show
mm-hmm.
and you, so, I mean, what I'm basically saying is you have fans and you're happy with what you're doing. And I think that people, what you said today is really good, because you're both telling people that this is just, you're researching it, but you're not, this doesn't mean you're doing it. And I think that's the line that people don't know anymore. Is this real or is it not? Yes, like you said, it's a story. You're making up a story with real images and real people in our minds, but it's still a story.
Yeah, so what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely, totally. It's allowing my imagination to run wild whilst teaching myself and exploring it myself, and for the readers to have a look. And,
right.
You know, they might read it afterwards and just go, no, it did nothing for me, it wasn't what I thought. But funnily enough, what most of my readers talk to me about is the story, not actually the erotica, which is what I really, really
that
enjoy
is really what you want. See, that's so interesting.
Yes.
You know, because, like, you know, I had written the Virginia Templeton stories, and that was my attempt, you know, erotic, three stories together, and I used words for me which I had never used before in any of my writing, and it was difficult for me, but I got through it and I did it. You know, and I had, well, Bethany Cross helped me, you know, to do some of this at the beginning, my first one, and then the story, then it became easier. And then the whole thing is, these are really just words, and you're right, because nobody has said anything about any of the words I use. They just like Virginia Templeton, the character, and they're talking about the story. So I think that when people get behind, you know, over that and they forget it, I think that's a good thing for the author. And I think that's what you're saying, Tess. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting to me, you know, this, you know, because that's why I'm like listening, and the weather's bad in Chicago, but I'm hoping to keep listening. But, you know, and I just wanted to say that, because it, I can't say it usually on my show, I'm just listening to everybody else, but I'm listening, and I'm, you know, because it's, you're just trying to get a different perspective on something that people do. I mean, this is just what it is.
True.
You know, I mean, Cassandra has been doing this for a long time.
Well, so, I mean, you know, Tessa, when was your first book published, Tessa? I can't remember now.
My first book was published back September 2011, I think.
Okay, so that's, yeah. And Cassandra, what about you? When is yours?
Mine was, the very first one was November 2010.
Yeah.
So it is interesting, though, I think, when, you know, there is so much good and bad press about erotic writing and erotic writers, meaning people do equate all of what we, you know, I write about everything. I just be a femme. I mean, I write male, male, female, female, aliens, and pirates, oh my, you know, and obviously I am not doing all of these things or I would not be
right, because you're just, you're an author. You're an author. You know, I mean, and it does draw the line to me. Like sometimes, like I see online people are going, oh, I won't read this, I won't do this, I won't do that, I'm not listening to this, I don't want to be associated with anybody like that. And, you know, it goes over the board because now what you're saying, social media, the good thing about it is brought people closer. But then when you listen to some of this, it's like you're going like, what? I mean, you know, and then people have books about brutal beating and things like that, and that's not exactly that appealing either, but it's a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even in soap operas, you know, I'm watching a soap opera that when my mother was ill, I was watching the same soap opera with her, and then when she passed away, I just kept watching it, and they killed a child off, and it drove me into, you know, I kept saying while I'm watching, I'm going like, don't do this, don't do this. And they did, because they pushed it to the limit, because it was so intense now, they have a whole storyline they're going on, and I'm saying in the background, don't do it, because I might not want to do that in one of my stories, but that's what makes everybody different, and that's what makes people listening and watching and reading, you know, different things. So I think what you're doing is you're bringing it out there. But, you know, but like even with 50 Shades of Grey, look at all the people that read it. Somebody, like everybody says they don't want to hear about this. Well, look what, how was it success? Somebody had to read these books. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's like, who read it then?
Right. Yes. This is the thing. Everybody I know has read them. And a lot of things to do with writing. I mean, we have a responsibility in ways of almost creating that moral line as such. Because if you write a character and you blur the lines as to whether they're good or bad, in other words, making them human, that's what gets people sometimes, and that's what's upset people about my latest book, because the person they thought that they held up in this massive regard as being ideal and perfect and this and other is completely not. But I don't know anybody in real life who is perfect, so why would I write a character that was unrealistic?
Right, right. So, like Gina Kincaid, like you were talking about her, she pushes the line, but she's very good about promoting her authors, which I must say is really wonderful, because I see the same thing Cassandra sees. People are not pushing their authors, and they've disappeared. And I think it's horrible. I keep telling people, keep writing. But I see over the last 4 years, so many people that have written in every genre are gone. Because they had no help. They had nobody behind them. No matter if it's a small publisher, everybody just disappears.
True. You have to have support.
Yeah.
You do.
And you know that as well as I do. Right. And it needs that. So I think that, you know, hopefully the people listening will, you know, understand how hard this is for all of us, because we're all out there trying to, you know, do our books and whatever, and it's just, it's interesting. It's very interesting to meet new people and listen to, like, the shows. I mean, and I think that you learn from the shows and you learn from people. Like, Tess, we probably would have never met you. You're not from, you know, you live in England. So I think it's such an exciting time now that people aren't, they're not embracing that. They're just so busy saying, like, I don't like what you write, but they're not realizing that you're just you're regular people. You're just
got a very regular life.
Yeah, so I mean, it's very interesting to hear this, and I'm glad I'm listening to the show today to hear this, because of course I know both of you, and I think that's a good thing, you know, and that is one of the reasons I left the covers on, because I'm thinking, well, I mean, Blog Talk has something about it, then we'll deal with it, but I'm thinking, I just, you know, the covers are out there. I mean, I know, Cassandra, you've had other shows about the covers and what's going on. So I don't, you know, I'm thinking it's an issue lately, but I think we should try to, you know, give the authors a break and realize that that's not them. It's just their characters. I think
well,
people don't understand
one thing
that
about the, no, they don't. And one thing I'll say about the covers for folks who don't know, we both, Seth and I, have had the joy of having covers designed by a wonderful man who is no longer with us. He recently had a heart attack, and he, though, had a very unique style. He used a lot of times real models, and then he put his art and his design around the covers. And if you would, you know, now that, that what Marcia said about the covers that are Tess's, if you look at them, they're really not, they're not exposing anything. They're not, you know, graphic nudity, but they allude to something so perfectly as to what the books are about that they are graphic in what they are. And in my opinion, I think they're brilliant covers.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. But, you know, but there is, that's what's happening now, and I don't know the answer to it. You know what I mean? You know, I don't really know. All I know is that what Tess was saying, her friends are liking and her fans are liking the story, and that, I think, is really what it's all about, is when we write books and when we do things, if they like the story, then they're not paying attention to these things because that's what we write for, a story. This is what it is. Like you said, it's a story. So I think I'm, that's really why I wanted to call in and say, because I don't get to say that on my own show sometimes because I'm listening to everybody else talk. But I do think that, you know, that we all have to be a little more tolerant of each other. And I think that realize that the people writing these books, just they're everybody, their mothers that go to the PTA. I say this on my show all the time. I mean, I had a show with five people on it, and one were teachers and whatever, and they everybody had different names, and I was going crazy because I'm trying to think of who would, you know, not call them by their other names. And I tried that myself, put another name, and then I changed it to Marcia, my regular name, because I went as Madison. I thought, like, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I've just written books. I'm thinking, like, nobody knows who Madison is. I mean, this is ridiculous. I was trying to be too I do it for my characters, but I didn't want to do it, so I went out, and that's who it is. You know, and I think it cost me at the beginning because nobody knew who it was, so it never got a great start. So then now I had to reissue it because it is, it's me. You know, you have to be who you are sometimes. You know, and it's, you know, and then you realize it's not that bad. I mean, I'm thinking, I see movies that the movies are so intense and the things that happen and they come from books, but when I do find when a man writes a lot of this, and men, they let it go more than when women write it. They make it a romance book where in a different world, it's called just a thriller or mystery. You know what I mean? It's a sexual thriller.
That's interesting that you would make that connotation.
Some films and books that I've read have been a lot worse than what I've written, I must admit.
Have you thought about that? I mean, you know, as far as the movies go, I mean, There's a lot of things that there's a lot of sex in movies,
and I think it's going to be
a lot of it's quite extreme.
Yeah,
and, you know, I don't know. To me, this is what I see a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be interesting seeing the 50 Shades of Grey movie coming out. Although I have heard that it's actually going to be a PG-13. I'm kind of thinking
You know what? How could that be? And you know. And you know what? They've delayed it because I guess they're figuring out how are they going to do that. Maybe they're going to figure out how are we going to do this. Because this is, you know, I mean, this is how it is. It's all about, you know, people reviewing and critics and, you know, all the people, you know, that are deciding what, if it's parental guidance or if whatever it needs to be. It's tough out there now. But I think that, you know, it's very interesting that you do these shows. And it's interesting, though, some of the points that you made. And that's why, because, you know, in England, it is so different. So, you know, I do think that I think people should just kind of look at everybody that writes as just authors. And we'll all hope for the best. That's really what we have to do, don't you? I mean, I know Cassandra's. I mean, that's what you've done for years. And Tessa, I didn't realize you were doing that many years. Yeah. So
and you know. We're not getting rich over this. Like Tessa was saying, you have to enjoy this or you might as well get out because the likelihood of lightning striking and you're going to be the next E.L. James is slim and nil.
You know, we were talking about this on my show the other day. Let me ask you a question, then I'm going to get off so you can go on. The people are very depressed when they're not selling a lot of books. I don't know, like, people think that you're going to sell like 1,000 books in one day. This is not the case. Do you want to talk about that for like a second? And I'm going to leave, but I wondered what your opinion was, because I think that's why a lot of writers are leaving now, because they're not selling a lot.
What do you think, Tessa?
I must admit, when I first started, I was quite not surprised, but a bit disheartened that not many books got sold. But over time, you know, that has increased, and you do have to work for it. And the more books you have out, the more you seem to sell. But it goes in phases, you know. You have some months where you don't sell very many, and then other months where you sell more than you expect. And sometimes it's books that you don't expect as well, which is all very interesting. But I've got to the point now that where if one person is buying my books and leaving a review, I mean, the reviews are more important than volume of sales, really.
Yeah.
For me, you know, someone's opinion is worth, you know, £1 million and more than that, and that's the way I feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
that's probably a very good attitude.
Yeah, yeah. I think, but Cassandra, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you see them, they're gone.
Yeah,
and it's kind of sad.
It is, and for me, having so many books out, everybody. You know, I get a whole lot of that whole jealousy, and everybody thinks that I'm making $1 million here.
Right.
And it can get very depressing if you allow it to, but
right.
You have to kick yourself in the, you know, butt and say, that's not what this is about. If you don't love writing, then don't try to get in this business.
Yeah. I did. On that note, I think I'll let you guys talk, but I think you're absolutely right. I hope people, when they're listening, realize that, it's just try to write the best story they can write. And that's
right.
What I think that both of you are trying to do, the best story that you write. I mean, and all the criticism, like good or bad, we're doing the best we all can. So, and I think that the market will get better once the people that have been are coming in here realize they're not making a lot of money, they'll leave, because there's too many people. It's not about people's books that are no good. It's about there's too many people, and that's too many authors right now that
mm-hmm.
aren't really good. And have ruined it for a lot of us out there, I think, you know. So anyway, I think continue on, and have a good show, and I'm listening. And you always do have different shows on. I know, count on that. But I think it's interesting, you know. I mean, I think I particularly like when we have different shows on World of Ink. I think it's, you know, and I'm hoping people listen to all the shows, because we're all different. We all write in different genres.
True.
So, and I
very
yeah.
true.
And I think yeah, and I think it's good. All right. So, Tess, what time is it there? It's like night. What time is it there? It's like seven
it's
hours different. Yeah, I'm sitting. I'm listening.
Yeah,
I said to my husband, because I said to my husband, I said, it's so weird. The radio's on. The weather's horrible here, and I'm listening to somebody from England. So weird that we can, like you said,
it's
amazingly small. Yeah, it's incredible. All right, have a nice show. Take care, and I'm listening, all right? And talk to you soon, both of you.
Thanks, Marsha.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I think she makes some good points, and I know we're getting a little short here on time, but I do want to just touch on a couple more points for your readers with you. What do you have coming up
mm-hmm.
that you foresee either that's going to be published or is burning in your head to write?
Hopefully finishing a book called Nylon Dreams, which is the sequel to Tickle Pink, so a bit more tickling from me. That's what I'm kind of working on, but what I would say to people is if they are interested in finding out more, then come to my website, which is tessawanton.com. Visit me on Twitter, you know, have a chat with me on Twitter. I tend to hang around there a bit. I've got an author page on Facebook, and just basically talk to me. Drop me a message. I might not reply immediately, but I'm always interested on talking to my readers or talking about any aspect of it, actually, because for me it's all about research and finding out about relationships. It's just the thing that I like to know. If I suppose I'm a bit nosy, really. But I would say it's been fantastic being on the show. Thank you.
Well, one last thing before we sign off with you. What has been your favorite fan-based experience so far?
I suppose, actually, I'm going to have to say my fantastic web web designer. He runs my website. He read one of my books, and we ended up having a very long conversation about it and saying, you know, talking about it and this, that, and the other. It turned out he was a really good IT guy. He's based in Italy, and he said it to me, okay, I'll design your website for you, and basically we've been good friends ever since. He runs my website, my emails, everything. It's just been magic. So, I mean, if I hadn't have written a story, I'd never have been able to get my website. I mean, weirder things have happened.
That's great. I mean, that's a true testament to it. I think that's fantastic. Well, what would you like to say to your readers before you sign off? Anything special and wonderful?
Well, I definitely want to thank my readers. They're such a loyal and supportive group. I mean, there's so many people I could actually mention. A lot of people I chat to on Twitter every day who stood by me through all my ups and downs and been so supportive with my writing and being completely brilliant to spur me on when I've had moments thinking, do I need to keep doing this? And they're just like, look, do it, because we read your book, and if you don't do it, then you're letting us down, and, you know, emotional blackmail goes miles, really. They're just, you know, my readers are just fantastic. I can't honestly say that I've ever had any situation where I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. It's, you know, you have moments like that, but I talk to my friends. I consider my readers friends, actually. It's probably, you know, I don't know whether they do, but, I go to sleep every night with a smile, just thinking, you know, work. Life couldn't be better, really. I've got all these friends all around the world, Australia, Italy, America, Canada, Japan, and it's just fantastic, really. I mean, what better?
That's wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that, and it is such a delight for those of you who don't know the lovely Miss Tessa. She really does have some incredible books, and not only that is she a wonderful and very talented author, but she's one of the nicest people I have met in this industry, and I've met some that are not so nice. So it's a pleasure having you as my friend, and it's a pleasure having you on my show. So thank you so much.
And thank you very much. It's been fantastic. Thank you for having me on.
You are very welcome, and you have a lovely rest of your evening and a good start to the week, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tessa. And for all of our listeners, don't forget this will be archived soon, so you can download and enjoy this over and over and over again. You've been on the Edge with Cassandra Dane, and in a couple of weeks we're going to have a dual show with authors Jennifer Sage as well as Sasha Ilievich, and we're going to be discussing a little bit more avant-garde topics, so I'll just leave it at that. So thanks very much. You've been on the World of Ink Network. Thanks to everyone, and have a wonderful rest of the day. Talk to you soon.